Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cash and welcome to the Dork Forest. Intros are hard. I have a new album. You should be listening to it. I have a new hour. You could be watching it on YouTube, but I appreciate you listening to this, The Dork Forest. You could go to JackieCasia.com or TheDorkForest.com, and you can listen to it there. You can listen to it on wherever you're listening to it right now. You can watch it on YouTube separately, and that is where Altercation is also streaming. The album is available wherever you listen to any kind of album, and it's also on Bandcamp, which has a bunch of other, some very old Dork Forest that are free on that channel. Otherwise, you should know that the Dork Forest is, I don't have a Patreon, so feel free to donate. If you have $100 a year, I would love $100 a year from everybody. You can hand me a sweaty wad of 20s when you come and see me do stand-up, or you can email me or Venmo me. The email would be PayPal, Jackie@JackieCation.com, where you can also email me. And Venmo is just @JackieCation, which is like my Instagram and my TikTok and all the things. And there's merch. There's Dork Forest merch. There's Made of Bees merch. And I don't know. There's so much stuff. I can't remember everything. You're doing vital work by listening to the Dork Short Forest, and I'm glad you are. And I hope you want to hear about somebody's dorkdom, because that's what's going to happen right now. Oh my gosh, can you hear my air conditioning? Probably not. It's me, Jackie Cation. It's the Dork Forest. And my guest today, stand-up comic, writer for the Oscars, Skylar Higley, used to write for Conan. How's it going? Ooh. Welcome to the program.
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Let me tell the people that Skylar is spelled S-K-Y-L-E-R and Higley is spelled S-I-H-I-G-L-E-Y. And his Instagram is @SkylarHigley. And he has a new podcast called Help Me Be Black, because he was raised by the whitest of all Mormons.
It was really, the way that the Wisconsin accent hits black was really, really great.
It's solid. It's Help Me Be Black. If you
awesome.
Want me to do a, if you want me to do a pub for it, if you want that to be your ringtone, you let me know.
That was great.
How many episodes do you have? Is it pretty new or?
It's pretty new. We're 19 episodes in, so it feels like long, but actually it's not, just because it's been weekly. So it's like we've been
right.
going
and
for...
And is it like an hour? Or?
Yeah, it's an hour long weekly, just chatting with other black comedians about blackness and stuff and unpacking
Fun.
Things to do with that. And, you know, I was raised by white Mormons, so I'm like, you know, teach me some of the things and let's talk about the things that I didn't grow up with.
Right, right. And so 19 episodes means, Rangers, you could get in on the ground floor of this particular podcast because mm-hmm. you have 19 hours that you want to listen to yeah. Other new things. So give it a shot and enjoy that very thing. Okay, but your dorkdom we're going to talk about today is both the TV show Mad Men and the dolphin communication experiment, which I've never mm-hmm. heard of. So let's start with the dolphin thing.
Ooh. I'm very excited to speak on this. So the it's well, I got so obsessed with this story at one point that I even wrote an entire screenplay about it. So I got really deep into research. the dolphin communication experiment is an experiment that started around, I want to say, in earnest, 1963. And essentially what was going on was, there was the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, SETI. This
sure.
was a board of Carl Sagan and this guy, Frank Drake, who was a scientist that basically created an equation about having to do with like extraterrestrial communication stuff. And they set out to, with NASA, you know, we're in the middle of the space race and all this stuff. They're like, look, we are maybe going to someday make contact with extraterrestrials, and we need a way to communicate with them. And so they were coming up with all these different kinds of experiments and stuff. And this one scientist, John C. Lilly, was somebody who had done experiments with dolphins for J. Edgar Hoover, and he worked on COINTELPRO and stuff like that. So he did a lot of stuff with people's brains, and he had researched animal brains and found out that, as a lot of people know, dolphins' brains are very big and very complex, and they have very complex communication systems and a complex language that they use. So they thought that because they have a complex language system, more complex than humans, that it should be possible for dolphins and humans to communicate. So they set out to create an experiment where they could, we're basically trying to figure out how humans and dolphins could speak to each other. And it just went so sideways, and it went bad.
It did not go well. This is, of course, so you know that we haven't domesticated human people have not domesticated an animal in probably 10,000 years.
Right.
And dolphins are smart enough to go, no, we see what happened to the dogs. Right. Let's not. Maybe that's it. Maybe they understand everything.
I think they might. I think they might. And they're like, and are well, just we want to do what we want to do. And they're like, well, we don't. It's actually a bad idea if we communicate with these monkeys. I think
right.
That could
if
have
these
been
if
it.
These monkeys tell us, they'll start bossing us around. And how about we just pretend that we are like, sure, you could throw me a fish and I'll toss a ball in the air.
Right. And they're like, I guess that's pretty fun. You know, if I don't have to find my own food, it's sort of that. They're just doing like a quid pro quo thing where they're like, well, they're giving food and I don't have to hunt for it all the time. So that might be good for me.
Okay, now before we get actually into this, I need to know, when did that Flipper movie come out? Because it was the 60s.
Okay,
the
so Flipper actually factors into this pretty well, actually.
Oh, well, that's amazing, because I own the original Flipper movie.
You do? So the movie came after the show, is that right?
No, it came, I thought it was before the show.
The movie was first, and then there was a show. Okay, that makes sense. No, that makes sense.
Right, that, okay, yeah, because the, let's see, 1964 to 1967 is the TV show. That's the TV show. The movie, which was one of the craziest plots, that was 1963 as well with Chuck Connors. So what did I just say that the TV show was? 64
to 67.
So 63.
Wait, can you tell me the original plot of the movie? Because I haven't seen the movie or the show. I've only seen like the intro parts. But tell me about the movie.
I will tell you, and this is a classic Dork Forest takeover of somebody else's Dork Forest, of somebody else's
No, this is absolutely perfect.
Here's what happens. Okay, so in 1963, there was a movie that I saw in like the early 70s on TV. And it was because I loved the Flipper TV show, which has two boys and a dad. And the dad is like, we're going to use him. And he's like a park ranger or something like that. The movie is about a fisherman off the Cape, off Cape Cod. And he has a son, he has a wife and a son, and they have overfished the area. So he's about to lose his boat, and there's a big hurricane, and he has to go get a loan on the mainland. And, he leaves, his son in charge, who is 6 or 7 years old in this TV show. And in this movie, he's literally 6 or 7 years old.
You can handle
might
the
be
boat.
Nine, but
he's old enough
I don't
to handle
think
the
he
boat.
Is.
He's this cannot, many. He can handle the boat.
Exactly. Well, he leaves him a list of chores. He's got to fix a fence. He's got to clean out a pen. He's got to clean up the yard. He's got to rebuild this and that, like a full on list. Mm-hmm. And the kid is out.
If you just want to abandon your child, just say you want to abandon your child, you know?
Right. And like, his wife is like, okay, we will do these things while you are gone. Okay. And so he has gone to the mainland. He's gone for like a week. Flipper is in, he finds a dolphin who's injured, and he nurses him back to health. And then his dad comes home and there's an amazing lecture that he gives his son where he says, are you four? Are you a baby? I left you a list of shit to do and you have blown it off. And it is one of the most amazing. And his wife, and the next scene is his wife going, hi, remember childhood? And it is one of the greatest scenes where his wife is like, a little harsh on the small child. And he goes, I don't know. I left him. And he goes, anyway, so you might want to go apologize to your son. And then, but get this. So the plot of it is so now Flipper knows where they live and his dad has captured a bunch of fish. And Flipper comes by and he's like, why would I fish when I can eat all these fish that are in this pen? So he jumps over, he eats a bunch of fish, he leaves. And the dad is like, we have to hunt and kill the Flipper.
Whoa, this is not he's like, the movie at all.
And then Flipper leads them to where the fish are all hiding. Like whatever's left of the fish, that's how Flipper redeems himself.
Okay.
he turns in all of his own stock of food. Anyway, so and then the Flipper TV show was about the ranger, and Flipper is used and then the new Flipper show was somehow, and I only know this because my nephew Salmon, who designed one of the original logos for the Dork Forest back in, I believe it was 2006. He when he was little in the 90s, I asked Salmon, he used to watch Flipper, and I said, have you seen the old one? And Sam goes, yeah, I've seen the old one, I've seen the new one. He was about 11. And I said, which one do you like better? He said, well, they're really different. The old Flipper, everyone just wanted to kidnap Flipper. The new Flipper, everybody just wants to kill him. The terrorists just want to kill him. And I was like, oh, what a weird fucking plot. Anyway, so this is what I know about the Flipper franchise. What do you know?
Wow, the Flipperverse. Well, I only know adjacently about the Flipperverse because, so the in the show, they filmed it with a bunch of dolphins, and they had to have multiple dolphins that were going to play Flipper. This studio who was producing the show, Marine Studios, and the scientists basically leased a couple of these dolphins for their experiment. So they were gonna be actor dolphins, and then the scientist John C. Lilly basically bought or rented, or I don't even know what the deal was, but he took those ones and that's the ones he started doing experiments on.
Because they were really smart and very trained dolphins?
I think just because he knew the guy who ran the studio and could just get them easily. Like they were trained, but it was like they were still like some of them were scared of, I know there was one that was like scared of humans and didn't want to interact that much. And I think the one sort of main one that they used was going to be one of the actor dolphins. So imagine you're a dolphin. You think you hit the big time and you've been cast in a big role. And then they're like, no, we're actually going to go do experiments on you.
We're going to actually take apart your brain at some point.
It's just terrible. Imagine going into an audition and they're like, hey, yeah, it's like this role's perfect for you. And hey, remember, you improvise and stuff. You can improvise. And then you did it and you think you killed the audition. And then suddenly it's like, oh, yeah, actually, we're going to take your brain apart.
You either did too well or a guy knows a guy I know needs you. He needs you to work at his warehouse. That's brutal.
The guy who ran the studio, Marine Studios, I think his name was Ivan. These are all like famous 60s people, and I was not around then, so I don't know. But it was like Ivan something.
What the producer? The producer?
The producer of Flipper.
Of Flipper.
And here's show. The Ivan Tors. That sounds to me. Yeah, Ivan Tors.
Yeah, Tors. There he is. Producer of animal movies and marine-oriented television series such as Flipper and Sea Hunt. Died of a heart attack. You guys.
Yep.
He's dead. Was he haunted by various sea mammals that he made work? Yeah. Possibly. He died in 83.
drag down. Yeah.
1916, this guy was born. So I don't know. I don't have a lot of, yeah.
So this is what's interesting, right? Is yes. This guy was married to the actress Constance Dowling. Constance Dowling had a relationship with Elia Kazan, but she introduced the scientist guy was kind of in this Hollywood world. He's one of these pop scientists. He was like sort of a he was a real scientist, but he was sort of like a Neil deGrasse Tyson kind of.
I was
going to
say
guy.
It was like Neil deGrasse
yeah. So he kind of, you know, went between worlds. He liked being kind of a popular guy. So he was hanging out with Constance Dowling, the Ivan's wife, and she introduced him to LSD, and that is where the experiment started going really sideways.
Unplanned pregnancy? Learn how people are getting abortion pills by mail for a safe abortion at home, no matter what state they live in, at plancypills.org. That's plancypills.org.
So it's like,
what were the experiments?
Great question.
I'm terrified to ask it, by the way.
Well, because it gets weirder and weirder as it goes on. And I was fascinated by how this all fell apart. But the experiments at first were sort of just like studying how dolphins' brain work, their communication styles, you know, observing and that kind of stuff.
Science.
You know,
yes.
Real science. And even back when he was working for J. Edgar Hoover, you know, during COINTELPRO, they were trying all these ways with different psychological experiments to, you know, experiment on people to see if they could spy in these different ways. And they were experimenting with ESP and all this stuff. And so John had like done some stuff with animals, but he started feeling like, oh, this is unethical. And they wanted to like figure out how to use dolphins as weapons. You know, they wanted to be able to like train dolphins,
sure, James
to, like,
Bond.
Strap bombs on them. And yeah, that's where that kind of stuff came from. And so he was kind of involved in that. He eventually stepped away because he's like, they're doing really dark stuff over here. So he kind of had already done some kinds of experiments and stuff. But then basically they started doing these things where when they got far enough, they were like, okay, so now to do the communication, we are going to try to teach the dolphins to speak English. And that is where
English.
They started getting kind of started going down the wrong way.
Right. Not like sign language. Not that they don't have the same palate as we do. They don't have tongue. Like it's not.
They don't have
work.
The same vocal cords and
You're
mouths.
Like, dude, I met a dragon while I was stoned. And the dragon said that we could teach dolphins how to say Vini, Vidi, Vici. We're going to teach them Latin and build from there. Oh, my God.
So that's sort of the thing, too, that's really interesting about it is like making the jump, because when you think about language and linguistics, like everything is that we are as human beings, even though it feels sort of like, oh, yeah, this can be whatever. Everything's a result of biology, like the way all our furniture and chairs and doors and houses are all shaped is the result of like what works for a human body. You know?
Right.
And so the idea that it's like, well, we're going to take a very, very recent human thing, which is language, which is English, one of the most recentish things in human history,
and very complicated.
We're going to give this. Like even other humans don't have an easy time learning to speak English.
Right.
But they're English like, but dolphins' brains are so big. It's so dumb. So, yeah. Essentially, they start trying to teach the dolphin English. There is this one research assistant. Her name is Margaret Howe. This is also one of these classic stories of a woman not getting paid enough and exploited more than she needed
to be.
Because she starts getting involved and like she starts being the teacher. And John C. Lilly, who is already kind of he was on the edge of being a whack, then in 1964 starts doing LSD. He sees the shift in perception that it had him do, and he was like, oh, okay, I think LSD, doing LSD is going to help me do these experiments. Doing LSD is going to help me, like, my brain bridge the gap between dolphin brain and human brains, like, kind of with psychic stuff.
Maybe. Sure, sure.
Sort of starts to think that he's psychic.
I drive better when I'm drunk. A lot of people don't know that.
Absolutely.
It's attitude. It's attitude. So, yeah.
And it, because this is all in the same time congealing with, like, the LSD revolution of the 60s.
Sure.
There's Timothy Leary and all these people. Everybody's starting to, in science is starting to do all of these crazy experiments with LSD. So he, yes. Yeah, so the Margaret starts trying to teach the dolphin to speak. They have to. I know it's really.
Is she taking LSD? Quick question.
She's not. She is not. She was actually.
She doesn't
in my studies,
even get to.
She was. It gets worse. Don't worry. She was anti. Even he wanted to start giving the dolphins LSD one time.
I wondered about that. Yes.
And they had three dolphins. One of them who was going to be like the star of Flipper. His name was Peter. She said, hey, you can give him to the other two dolphins, whatever. Don't give him to Peter, because Peter, they had made the most progress with. Peter, she was like closest with. So he goes to try to give the dolphins LSD. She goes, no, you got to give the other dolphins LSD. He gives it to them. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't like visibly do anything to the dolphins, really. So he's kind annoyed by that. Yeah, it just didn't. He thought it was going to like, they don't react to it. It doesn't work for their brains the same way. Like it's a,
right. It turns
like
out
another human drug.
They're
yeah.
dolphins. Yeah. Oh my God.
They're like, we're kind they're of like vibing all the time. We don't really need that.
Exactly. And what about, I was just like, just give me a decent herring. Like, why don't you go with psychedelics to dolphins? That could not have been ethical.
Oh no, it gets even worse. So the part of what is happening, and I'm getting the timeline a little muddled. I don't remember exactly when every situation is happening, but this all starts congealing at the same time. So between 63 and 65, kind of.
Okay. Yep.
And the whole thing kind of completely blew up in 68. So
okay.
Margaret starts trying to teach this dolphin English. The dolphin, they start thinking, oh, well, the way, you know, kids get taught the best is if they have like a real strong connection with the person teaching them. So they're like, we want Margaret to like be with this dolphin a lot, that she has to just be around him all the time. But the dolphin starts, he starts getting into like the area of like 7 years old, prepubescent kind of time or prepubescent kind of time. So what they have to do is they have to lift this dolphin up out of the pool and like take him to, they let the dolphin just have sex with the other dolphins.
Okay. So they start breeding the dolphin to sort
they just are trying to, because the dolphin starts getting distracted from the English lessons because he's horny. And so he will because the way dolphins assault people, he'll like hit against Margaret and start like punching her because he's like, I want to ejaculate. And so they have to start taking the dolphin and taking it to the other
different whorehouses,
dolphin around, you know. Okay, go ahead. Go.
Spoiler alert. I read an article about dolphins raping humans.
Mm-hmm.
Is that coming? Is he coming?
He's going to be coming, but it's kind of, it's a little bit of a different situation.
Thank God.
But it seems like what's going to happen is consensual.
Shite.
So to back up a little bit, as John starts doing LSD, Margaret, they want her to have a close relationship with the dolphin in order to teach it English because they think that he'll listen better if he has a good relationship with her. She has the idea to her live with the dolphin. So they take this research facility that they had in St. Thomas in Caribbean, and they flood the research facility. And so that she can, and they do all of these renovations. It takes months. They have to close down the whole facility. So she can live with the dolphin. And then they have like a flooded upstairs, and then like kind of the downstairs is kind of, they can still go in there. But the dolphin can get around, and she just lives with it all the time, and she like doesn't leave. And she is just like roommates with this dolphin so that it will like her enough and she can teach it English. Eventually, they get tired of lifting this 300-pound dolphin to take it from upstairs down the elevator to downstairs so it can have sex with the other dolphins. So she basically just starts jerking off the dolphin in between the lesson.
What? You know what? This at least, I don't know. I'm pretty sure that people jerk off horses so that they can breed the horses. This is, I mean, it's all in the name of science.
You gotta do what you gotta do for science. So she's jerking off the dolphin.
And you're saying that she's not being very well paid for this. This is not.
So, okay, so this is the thing.
Did she buy land? Whatever happened to her?
I researched it.
Margaret Howe? Yeah.
Margaret Howe Lovett was her name. And I researched it because I did pretty in-depth research, and I could not find in what I was researching if she ever was really paid for this or what the situation was. Because I started thinking, like, what's she getting compensated? Because her whole storyline is very much like she's obsessed with animals. She loves animals. She always had a dream of if an animal could talk to you. And she didn't really go to like a college or anything. She just wanted to be involved in this experiment. Like, there are some, because this all happened in the 60s, there are some details that are kind of unclear from my research for it. So it seems to me like she kind of like heard about this, or there was like a job listing and she showed up one day. But I don't know. It just doesn't seem like she was very well paid for it. I'm not sure, but I know that it felt like she kind of got like, because she was much, you know, this is like a woman in her 20s and then like fucking 40-year-old scientist. So it kind of seems like she got sort of tricked into internship free labor that turned into this whole thing.
Right, which was still, she is still alive.
Yeah, she is.
That's insane. Yeah. She is eventually married a human person.
Mm-hmm. She married this guy, Thomas. Thomas took pictures at the lab. See, I know all of this. Thomas was the lab photographer. There are even photos that I have found of the labs and stuff on JohnC.Lilly.com, which is still up, by the way.
Which is
and
still,
if you check out this website by the Dork Forest people, go ahead, type in JohnC.Lilly.com, go to his website. It's so 90s, 2000s, like, you know, back when the websites looked all bright and silly. It's like a scientist website, but this is like a psychedelic, like, ooh, like, it's such a silly
website.
Like,
he might
website.
Still be tripping. Is he still alive? Like,
no, he died. He died.
Was he killed by dolphins? Who killed him?
You would hope so.
What's the story?
He just died from, like, I don't know how he died. Let's see.
Overdose. Let's 86. See if he died. He died in 86.
Death, heart failure. 86, September 30th, 2001. So he got to live to see 9/11. And then
wow. Well, I like that they insist that he might have known Timothy Leary and Ram Dass and Werner Erhard. He did know them. They were all frequent visitors to the Lilly home.
They all hung out. They all did all of the stuff.
Look at this guy's face. Oh, my God.
A nut. And he was
from
St.
Paul. He's from Minnesota.
He's a St. Paul, Midwestern boy. It seemed like he started out and he was kind of a nut when he started. But then starting to do the LSD and all that stuff, it just took him way off. He also, so, you know, float tanks, the things that Joe Rogan likes to get inside of. Like when Joe Rogan likes
the isolation.
He likes those isolation tanks.
Self-degradation tanks is what I always call them.
So John C. Lilly invented those. It was his idea to do those.
Yeah. I don't know. The more there's a, you know, that Sarah Ross, she's been on the show. There's a comic named Sarah Ross. Sarah Heather, Hester, whatever. She has a song, so stop giving men microphones. And whatever you hear about a guy like John Lilly, you just want to go, oh my, that's not. See, here's the thing. The other thing that happened in the 60s. Margaret was born in 42, right? You say, or she was like 20, yeah, early 20s. Yeah,
she's younger.
And in the 60s, there was a science fiction series that was started called The Dragon Riders of Pern that I have mentioned more than once on The Dork Forest because it is one of my favorite books from when I was in my 20s because it was super fun. And it's about, and what you do, remember in Avatar when he connects with the horse and with the dragon with his ponytail? Well,
you gotta have your little dreadlock that connects.
Yeah, exactly. You got your ponytail, you jam it in.
5G ponytail.
Right. It's a
an Ethernet cable that comes out.
It's very nice. It's in later versions, they're much thinner. And this was a Wi-Fi version of connecting with the dragons. And she started writing Anne McCaffrey. Who also might have been from Minnesota, I'm uncertain. But she wrote these books about dragons telepathically connecting with riders. And then they fight the good fight to save the planet and they're generational. And it's this amazing thing. So we find out 13 books later, Skylar Higley, that Pern, the planet that they all live on, the dragons of the dragon riders of these people, was colonized, was settled by Earthlings hundreds of years earlier, and by people and by dolphins.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That dolphins were super smart, and they were like, you have polluted the planet's waters. We are willing to also go into stasis if you can find, because Pern, we find out in this 13th, in later books, in a later like prequely book, that Pern actually stands for Parallel Earth Resources Negligible.
Whoa.
Which is why the Empire forgets about them entirely, because they don't have any resources. They're completely, they're like, yeah. So they are allowed to sort of grow into their own Earth.
That reminds me of, isn't it Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where right at the beginning, the dolphins all just kind of fly away?
Yes, because they're like, guys, things about they're building a highway pass. They have to get rid of this planet.
We're leaving.
Thanks for all the fish.
Yes.
So long and thanks for all the fish. That was the name of the fourth or fifth book into his trilogy of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Get it? It was a trilogy, but there were more than anyway. So I do like Douglas Adams. Did you read Douglas Adams?
I read Hitchhikers. I didn't read any of the other ones. I read the first one because then the first one ends right on a cliffhanger. And I was like, oh, OK. And then I didn't read more.
the first three are actually quite good. But if you don't read the first one when you still are celebrating sarcasm as an art form, you miss a window. And then you read it and you go, I get it. That's why a lot of people read it when they're 12 or 13, because it's a heyday of sarcasm. I, late bloomer, read it when I was 19, my heyday of sarcasm, and thoroughly enjoyed all of them.
I read it late, but I was like, even though I didn't probably like it as much as I would have if I was younger, I was still like, I think this is fun. I didn't feel like I needed to read more of them I was like, okay, I got it. Yeah, I'm glad I read it. It feels like I see how it's influenced culture now. I like that a lot.
Right. To know, it's why I watched the first Godfather. I couldn't watch any more of them. I was like, I get it.
Yes.
These people are never going to get their shit together.
Speaking of semi-related to this, another thing I read late was Flowers for Algernon. I just read that maybe the last year. I think it might have been during like the last Oscars thing right before, because I remember going into the Oscars room being like, you guys, Flowers of Algernon is awesome. And everybody's like, yeah, we've all read that book. And I was like, yeah, I know, but I never read it. It's cool.
Right. You are decades younger than that writer's room. So yeah, everyone else is like, yeah, we've been there, man. We get it. I'm glad.
But it's like,
have you read My Side of the Mountain?
No.
Okay. It is the book you read right before or after you read Flowers for Algernon when you're 13. So if you're 13 in 1979, right? Or 1980.
Yeah, to all the listeners out there that are 13 in 1979, go ahead and check it out.
You check that out. You're going to love My Side of the Mountain. They've all read it.
So to just finish off the story of this dolphin situation. So she starts jerking off the dolphin. The experiments begin, of course, going nowhere. a writer from Hustler magazine hears about her doing this and makes like this like sexy version of it, where it's like there's this woman that has sex with a dolphin all the time, and that kind of goes 70s, 60s version of viral.
Sure.
And everybody's like, this is really weird. And just because the experiment's not going anywhere, now NASA and the Air Force and everybody was funding them, and they start pulling their funding. Carl Sagan is kind of like, I don't know
everybody's
why I used to hang out with this. They're like, this is, and because, John is going into his float tank being like, I'm going to use my psychic connection to start connecting Margaret and the dolphin. He starts seeing visions of what he thinks are aliens that he calls Echo, that are like these kind of like when you hear about DMT elf kind of things that. He's seeing that, and that they're kind of telling him about all this stuff. And so they get defunded. He has to move the experiment from the big research facility into a smaller, tiny research place in Florida, and where their dolphins are just basically in these little tanks. And it's like really not good. They can't.
Right.
They can't really survive in these tiny tanks. And then the end is quite sad because Peter, the dolphin, gets so depressed now that he's away from Margaret and can't get jerked off every day anymore that the dolphin commits suicide, which is something they can do.
Real.
I found out. It's for real, because dolphins can regulate, because they're mammals but go underwater, they consciously regulate their own breathing. So what dolphins are doing all the time, where they come up, they get oxygen, and then they hold it, and they can hold it for a long time. But in order to do that, they have to be able to consciously regulate when they're holding their breath and when they're not. So if a dolphin gets depressed enough and wants to commit suicide, it literally can just like open its lungs, take in a bunch of water, and not breathe and just drown itself if it wants to. And that is what this dolphin did.
So that is the real real thing that came out of that research, was finding out that dolphins could commit suicide.
I think they knew that, but they just like were still like, they found out
how
you
did
can't use dolphins English.
Oh my God. How do you find that out until you have driven depressed a dolphin so hard that it just like beaches itself and says, I gotta go. Wait, can they do it on like a dime? They can just like open their, like you said, it sounded like they could just open
their lungs
and kill themselves.
I don't know how fast they do it, but it seems like they can, like sort of just open their blowhole and just let it in and then just kind of be done with it.
And just essentially just drown themselves.
Which is, it's really, really dark, but so then once that happens, then John's like, oh, this is messed up. I shouldn't have been doing this, and kind of he has the smallest come to Jesus moment ever, because as I'm researching this, it's the funniest thing. He like realizes, but then he's just like, oh God, we can't keep him in captivity. And so he lets dolphins out. It leads to some legislation about animals in captivity and experimenting on animals and stuff. But then he's like, spends the rest of his life still kind of trying to communicate with dolphins, but he's just like, Yeah, but we just let them, we're just going to research them in the ocean and try to communicate with them in their natural habitat. Obviously, they're not going to speak to us in captivity, but if they're in the ocean, maybe they'll speak to us there. So he kept going.
That guy really wanted to find out what dolphins knew. But if he had read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, he would have known that they're mostly just talking about currents.
Right.
Or good fishing. Or where they can get jerked off by other dolphins.
Like, they would talk about things that are irrelevant to them, and it would not be that interesting to us. Like,
right.
We don't need to talk to them.
Right. You can't ask a dolphin what they're reading. That's insane. Right. Like, what? So what else did you learn other cool things about dolphins while researching this? Because I also, the dolphin communication experiment still exists.
Right.
I looked it up, but I don't think Margaret still works for, I mean, is any
no,
connection
they
with
just
them at all.
Did it in such a weird way, but they learned, you know, they learned an, I guess, okay amount about dolphin communication. You know, you just learn sort of the, like, there is the complexities of dolphins' brains, the way they communicate about stuff, and they just communicate on all kinds of different wavelengths and kind of can.
Is it body language? Is it slaps?
It's just the same way kind of whales do it. It's like the noises and the echoes and like the echolocation stuff of how they do things. And it's like definitely interesting. I don't know if I have any other big takeaways that I learned other than like dolphins can they can do, you know what called a Doppler effect where a car is driving by and it goes
yeah, the sound.
That's called the Doppler effect. Dolphins are able to do that with their own voices, basically. Like they can affect their own speech to do those kind of sounds,
which is probably why he thought that they could communicate.
Right. Because they can do their speech and their language is like they have a language between them and it's just very, very complex. And they just thought that if we could translate that language to English, then we could have an interspecies Rosetta Stone that if we had sort of that format, then if aliens ever came, we would be able to we would be able to triangulate this and talk to any species in the universe that made contact with us was the idea behind it. But it just went so wrong, and he just was started doing LSD and went crazy.
Because he was high. Right. That's why it went wrong. Because he was fucking high.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He's like, LSD, it's going to fix it. And then there's so many interesting things. I would, if you're listening and interested, I would look into it because there's so many recordings of him and him being like, later in his life being like, I realized at a certain point, like they were programming the journey, like the dolphins were the ones who were coordinating it. And it was just kind of, what are you fucking talking about?
Right.
What are you talking about?
So I was on the west coast of Australia and I in the joke, I do a bit about swimming with dolphins. Mm-hmm. I did not swim with dolphins. I swam with whale fish or whale something. And they're like dolphins. They're very smart and they're great. And I have the same opinion because you could pay to swim with dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever swam with dolphins?
No, I've only been on like a boat where they're like there, you know, nearby.
Oh, like a whale
I've never
watch.
Swam with them.
Whale watch and you see dolphins sometimes as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're not interested. We swam with these whale fish and all I could think the entire time was we're interrupting something.
Mm-hmm.
They had places to be. They had things to
right.
do.
It's like when you
we're
do a comedy show at a restaurant where nobody was expecting it.
Yeah, that those pop up like, comedy it. Shows. You thought you were just going to have a nice dinner and conversation. Guess what? Nope.
Guess you're about to hear what's going on in my brain. Isn't that
exactly?
You wanted to talk to your friends? No. Here's a random guy, and here's me unpacking my trauma. Hope it's funny enough.
Five, five people are about to do 7 to 12 minutes. I'm talking, by the way, with Skylar Higley, great comic, great writer. He has his Instagram is at Skylar Higley, and his new podcast is called Help Me, I'm Black. And that is it on Apple Podcasts and all the Spotify
Spotify and everywhere everybody gets their podcasts. It is on YouTube. There are like small kind of whatever's on YouTube, but you can anywhere on the internet. You can, I swear you can find it, listeners, if you want to.
If you know about podcasts, it's there. Because that's, how did you find The Dork Forest? You could be watching this right now. Anyway, you have a whiteboard behind you. Are you writing something? Is that your set? Is that the most elaborate set list in the world?
This is all just like my stuff to do, but on my other side of the whiteboard, which I have mostly erased, but I am working on multiple writing things right now, and I'm working on stuff with InfoWars and Tim, you know, the Onion bot InfoWars and Tim Heidecker's kind of trying to start a comedy network thing. So I am working on a couple things with them.
Fair enough. And that's right, because you do work for the Onion, right?
I do. You know, I kind of freelance for them and have been in the family. So they hit me up to do things. We just worked on a silly, fun, like America documentary that's going to be coming out on July
4th. Did you ever write any of the headlines? I only read the headlines.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I wrote a lot of
the headlines.
The
headlines are the most fun.
The headlines are great. Yeah, I was a staff writer for, after I did Conan, I went back and I was a staff writer at The Onion for about a year and a half, almost 2 years before After Midnight. So I wrote a lot of headlines and it was really fun. I still love them and I go back and do stuff.
And you
with
go
them
back
the
and do stuff when you in between other projects. So
yeah, and it's a
that's
really
great that
good
they're flexible.
Fallback thing.
It's a beautiful
they love it.
That. Yeah, I'm sure they love it and you love it because then you get to continue to live indoors the whole time of your life.
Well, that's and that's also something that I would and listeners and adults might know this, but this is why it's important to be A, pretty good at your job and B, be kind to people at jobs and have them like you so that then if you want to go back to do stuff with them and continue working on projects, they will have you around.
It's true. My last day job was just that. And then all of stand-up comedy is that.
100%. At this level,
anyway, where I don't get booked because I fill the rooms. Mm-hmm. I get booked because I'm not a monster to work with. Right. And I'm funny. So that's my recipe for success, you guys. I guess if you figure out how to fill the rooms, you can be a monster, but that seems like a waste of time as well. So don't do it.
Fill those rooms first, though, you guys, before you try monster stuff. Fill the rooms first and then think about it for a long time. Think about it.
Yes.
Because you might not be able to fill the rooms forever.
That's it. You're going to be coming down eventually. And as always, suicide, then homicide. That's the order. Other than that, you have like 15 minutes if you want to talk.
Okay.
Do you have dolphin-related Mad Men things that you want to talk about?
Well, it's not dolphin-related Mad Men things, but it's funny that these were the two that we decided to talk about because the Mad Men thing, I am obsessed with that show, as a lot of people are, but I think it was – you ever watch – I think it was maybe like the first show that I ever watched that I was like, oh, this is like a grown-up show. Because I got to that show pretty young. And I think I might have been, I don't know, 17 or 18 when I would have started like seeing it.
Yeah.
And it was, but it's just like.
Because it's super mature.
It is.
And complicated and layered. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that once you sort of. You can go, oh, yeah, it's about the 60s or whatever. But once you sort of see beyond that and how much it's about the human condition and how much about how that time in American history and culture was such an inflection point between sort of – and we see it a lot now, too. It reflects a lot of, I think, the late 2010s and into the 2020s. But how the idea of, like, the American dream and who we are as Americans was one way. And then kind of the 60s came and there were all these disruptions when it came to the civil rights movement and Vietnam and this hippie movement and stuff. And it's all like, well, culture could also is different. And we've got to start thinking about things in a different way. And it's sort of this clash between the old way and the new way. I found that super interesting, and that also sort of like influenced my thoughts on this whole dolphin thing, because it's like kind of like what these guys are just such a problem. They're just these white guys that have a bunch of money and do whatever they want, and you're like, what are you doing? Like, what
Who
are you
has doing? Sold you three dolphins, you asshole.
Why do you get to have dolphins? And
why do you get to have dolphins is an excellent question.
And so they're just like kind of correlated. Like my the screenplay I wrote, not that I'm here to hawk the screenplay, but it's like also about race and the civil rights movement in this really interesting way.
Yeah,
because it was all happening on the same timeline, and I found that incredibly interesting. And that's what I like about Mad Men too, is not only you're watching this show about these people who are okay trying to take things from their life, turn it into art, turn in work, which is obviously relatable to us as comedians, but also there's like these big historical moments that will happen sometimes in the foreground, sometimes in the background, that will be like, oh, that is how it feels to be alive, where it's like the stuff does happen. And a lot of times we talk about history in the context of like history, but
the big
this
stuff
is like,
but you still have to go to work. You still have to put dinner on the table, and you
and
still
you're
have
gonna
to
be going through something at the time, you know, you're worried about whatever's up here and you're like, I got this. And then something happens in the world and you're like, whoa, I'm seeing that through my lens. And I think the show did a really good job of that. So I'm obsessed with it for so many of those reasons, but it just felt, you know, especially with what we've gone through in the last 5-10 years, it felt very like, oh, this is what it feels like to be alive. You're kind of going through something, and then people go, oh, there's this giant pandemic and everybody's experiencing this. And you're like, yeah, but also I'm experiencing it. So I loved it.
Right. I have to say, so I did not finish it because what I initially loved about it was the advertising campaigns, because I come from salespeople. And so the advertising campaigns were my favorite. I believe the one, the carousel.
Yeah.
The slides. Mm-hmm. And because I remember when I was a kid, we had a slide projector and my dad made slides. And we would sit around once a year and watch all the slides. And my dad would say the same thing every time, this one picture. I just saw my dad and I showed him a picture that was on my phone because I got the slides made digital. 1,000 years ago, right? And he, I was like, remember this picture? Because it's just a picture of a very beautiful German woman down in the Bahamas, that a trip that he and my stepmother took. And he goes, I remember that picture. Why did I take that picture? I said, every time this picture would show up in the slides, you would say, this woman yelled at me afterwards that I took that picture, because I think she was with a guy that wasn't her husband. These two, and the guy was standing sort of half in frame. Guy that kind of looked like Jeffrey Epstein. And it might have been. Who knows? It was 1970, whatever.
Right.
But my dad would always say, I thought she was beautiful and I wanted to take a picture of her. And so, I know, which of course is a classic Elliot Cation. Feel free to ask for consent. Right. Anyway, costumes aren't consent is how we put it in the role playing world. Anyway, this is the longest story ever. So sorry. But he would always. And so when they confronted him, he said, I was taking a picture of a ship behind you. And they believed him. And in this picture, there's no ship. You can't see any sort of boat.
They didn't even turn around.
No. Well, they turned around and there was
a boat.
No,
it was a fast ship.
It was super fast. And remember, it was all on film. So they couldn't check a digital. Yeah, they couldn't check the digital. And those slides were such a big part of my childhood, because once a year we would, you know, and then my dad would take another two rolls of something and we would add them to the slides and he would have to buy another carousel. Yeah.
And that episode in particular, and the show itself does a really good job of like that. He is going through something so personal with his family, and he makes the pitch like such a sentimental thing, because that's what advertising is. And it really And advertising conceptually is so interesting because, like, it does represent the problem when it comes to capitalism and consumerism and sort of how everybody's being sold this bill of goods and they're unhappy and the product is supposed to make them happy. And it creates this cycle that, like, supports America and all of this bad stuff that continues to make you unhappy. But then also there is this, like, very big element of, like, honesty and truth and sentimentality that goes into art that then gets, like, bastardized for that thing. And so it's so interestingly explored, because advertising is, like, bad, but you're like, but is it also beautiful? I love, you know, all of that stuff.
Right?
The advertising parts are the best part of the show.
Right. That it really is. And then, you know, and then they do show all those big pictures. And another image that stuck out for me in the early episodes that I watched was when they go for the picnic and then she just litters.
Oh, yeah. And she I just didn't know that was like a thing before that.
Yeah, that was a big thing before the EPA and the no litter campaign and you could just, my dad would throw just all packaging went out the window.
Jesus Christ.
Like, my stepmother would finish a package of cigarettes and just throw it out the window.
Wow.
And you're like,
nuts.
Insane. It sounds completely and entirely bananas. So, like, those clips would come up and I'd be like, right.
Yeah.
We were even worse. And, right. You know, and then there's all this sort of blowback now about how, well, I remember when I was a kid and you were like, that you were an irresponsible member of a society. And
just because it's the way it was when you were a kid does not make it better. I don't know why that's people's argument ever. When I was a kid, and it's like, yeah, well, now you're an adult. Now let's be adults.
Right. Right. We're all being adults now, right? Watch it happen around you. And but I did. I mean, and they were all very, you know, the costumes and the way it was shot. It was a beautiful show.
Right.
I just and the gynecologists were all men. But I was made uncomfortable. I think because I grew up on the end of that, you know.
Mm.
And so yes. I would see all the horrible. And it's not that I, you know, that the racism and the sexism didn't just change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just it half buried itself and took a pivot. And, you know, I saw some Colin Quinn clip from 1991 yesterday on Instagram.
Okay.
And he was just like, he was talking about, you know, when you're hitting on babes. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. When you're hitting on babes, sure.
Sure, when you're and it wasn't, there was no irony in
right.
his voice. Like, it wasn't like, you can call somebody bitches and babes and you can use all those same horrible words, but you have to pretend you're being ironic.
Right.
And you are
it's
pretending.
Very interesting. It's very interesting. It's, oh yeah, when you're hitting on, like, you know, when you're hitting on babes.
Your casualness on, because he was doing his prostate. It was his prostate joke.
Right. I've just never once in my life felt like I was hitting on babes. You know?
Right.
I never would have said that to somebody. Oh, I was hitting on babes the other day.
And I was successful is the only, that's the end of that story. It has
right.
to be. I believe it was, my one of my brothers was telling me, He was, because him and his wife have been together for like 40 years. And I love how they met, because they met when he came to college and she lived in the women's co-op and he lived in the men's co-op. And University of Wisconsin had these co-op housing things that were mm-hmm. very cheap. And they would have mixers. I mean, it sounds like the 12th century, right? It sounds like it was 1952, but in a movie, but it wasn't, it was 1975. And, but they would have these mixers and which might as well be 1952 to you, but because he's my brother, he was working the room.
Mm.
He was just introducing himself to everybody that was standing against the wall, not dancing. Right. And, he was 18.
Wow. Oh yeah, you're like from a family of hustlers, right?
Yes.
You're from a family of like go-getter kind of guys, kind of finger guns kind of guys. Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, but ironic, because they know how to make the sale. And so, but he ended up going up to my sister-in-law and she was in the corner and he was like, and this was, by the way, Dirty Dancing came out in 87. So it's 1977 when he's talking to her and he goes, Why aren't you in this corner? And she said, oh, because it was raining and my pants are still wet. And so he ended up cornering her and talking her head off all night. And then he was like, well, do you want to walk back to the women's co-op? And she was like, yeah. And as Sue puts it, he never left. And and wow. They have been together for 40 years. But yeah, my brothers are a bit of serial monogamists. That story takes us almost to the end. Do you want, should I, that's what I'm like. I will take over a dork for us, but Skylar, thank you so much for doing, is there a SkylarHigley.com?
There was, and then I wasn't really using it. And now that I am getting booked on dates again, I'm like, oh, I should get my website back. But right now it's just Linktree and Instagram and Twitter, okay. Unfortunately. But I'm going to be putting a website back up again, but just Skylar Higley on Linktree. And,
just go to Instagram. It's at Skylar Higley and find the podcast.
Twitter, TikTok. I'm around on the internet, you guys. You can use it. You'll
attainable
you'd love
goal
it.
To find Skylar Higley. And thank you so much for doing the show. This
thank
has been
super
fun.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Rangers,
don't talk to dolphins, you know, everybody.
Leave them alone, even as fun as it sounds. Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?